Hello, you are listening to CITR's 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting at the UPC Point Grey campus on the traditional unceded Coast Salish land of the Musqueam people. This is the first episode of Babe Waves, the sequel to Lady Radio, brought to you by CITR's Women's Collective. This is Hayone, joined by Elsie, Lyra, Rachel, and Shai. The Women's Collective is based around creating a space on air to talk about current topics related to gender. This week's episode will touch on UBC's sexual assault policy, followed by a discussion from five of our collective's members. First, here's a recording from an episode of Unceded Airwaves from the CITR's Indigenous Collective. It's a panel featuring Indigenous Collective Coordinator Lisa Gerbaf, along with Sarah Hunt and Lucia Lorenzi, talking about decolonizing violence and building a consent culture on campus.
And first, we did want to check in and let everyone know that we are talking about sexual violence today. So if that's a hard topic for you, please consider tuning in to CITR after this program ends, which is at 6 p.m.
Waves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional ancestral unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. So I just wanted to give you a trigger warning as we're going to be talking about some sensitive content, and we will be discussing a recent attack on the UBC campus and gender-based violence more broadly with Sarah Hunt and Lucia Lorenzi. So if you are sensitive to this subject matter, please change your dial right now and come back at 2 o'clock. So I just wanted to introduce my guests. I am joined in the studio today by Sarah Hunt, who's an assistant professor in the First Nations and Indigenous Studies program and the Department of Geography. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. And on the phone, we also have Lucia Lorenzi, who is a biracial settler of Afro-Caribbean and European descent, and she lives and works on the unceded Coast Salish territories. How are you, Lucia?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show. So first, to start off, maybe if I could get you to introduce yourself, Sarah, mm-hmm. and just tell us a bit about your background.
Sure. Well, I'm Quagil from the Kwakiwak Nation from Sahi, so what's now called Fort Rupert on the northern part of Vancouver Island. I'm also of Ukrainian and English ancestry on my mom's side, and I grew up on the Kwangan territories in Victoria, BC. I just moved here last year, where I started the position with First Nations and Indigenous Studies. I grew up, as I said, mostly in Victoria, and started doing work around these issues of violence and law, questions of justice in our communities when I was a teenager. And actually, when I was in my second year of my undergrad, is when I really started to think about these issues in my own family and in my own life, and have been doing that work mostly through community partnerships, a lot with Indigenous youth around the province, and now more across Canada, and thinking about issues of kind of everyday violence, but also of specifically the ways that institutions and governments perpetuate violence, and also ways that that's resisted in our daily life.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for coming on the show. We're really grateful to
Thanks
have you on
me.
On our first episode of our second season.
Mm-hmm.
Lucia, would you be able to give us a little bit of background about a bit of your experience in UBC and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. So I came to UBC in 2010. And in 2013, when the rape chants and the anti-Indigenous chants came out, I started writing publicly about these issues, and really just trying to focus my attention towards what responsibilities we have within our university community to fight not only sort of the violence that's built into the institution, but the violence that's in our larger culture. So for the past 2 years, I've been writing and speaking a lot, and my dissertation also focused on how we represent sexual violence. So my work isn't so much necessarily in things like policy, but more in questions of representation and how representations of violence can also be violent in and of themselves, and how we can work against that.
Mm-hmm. Wow, thank you so much. Well, we really appreciate you being on the show as well today. And thank you for allowing us to call you, especially because this issue is very important to not only our unceded airwaves listeners, but I feel to a broader audience as well. Mm-hmm. And so kind of what spurred this topic for the Indigenous Collective and Unceded Airwaves was there was recently an attack that had happened on campus. Mm-hmm. It was a bit difficult to find the information about it. We got an email from the president, kind of a mass email that didn't really give too many details. And just kind of we were able to piece it together from here and there. I don't know if you would be able to maybe just give us a brief overview of what may have happened with the assault that had happened on campus recently, Sarah?
Sure. Well, I guess two things. One is that what you're saying in terms of the lack of information or the way that information is put out, that's something I think that both Lucia and I don't want to speak for you, Lucia, but that we're concerned about. And certainly the panel that we were both a part of that put out this report about sexual assault on campus, which came out in the summer, but actually was only made public recently. That was something we heard over and over again in our consultations, was about how is information shared, and how it's framed really shapes how, you know, if people's level of fear on campus, the way that we can practically be safe, take measures to be safe, when the information is being filtered. So, from my understanding, and Lucia, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, there was a violent attack in residence towards a young woman or a woman who lived there, a resident, by a male resident, and it involved a weapon. It was very scary, and that people who lived there intervened, and there were lots of people who kind of stepped in, and as a result, that person was arrested and charged. I think that the way that it was put out in the media. And to the university public was our population was concerning for lots of reasons, but including it took quite a long time for information to come out, but also that it was, you know, I think the work that we've been doing for a long time in our own ways on campus and off is thinking about how these individual incidents get seen as just an isolated thing, when in fact there's a long history of different kinds of violence that you know, we need to take seriously in terms of connecting the issue of sexual violence, which is a big topic right now nationally and internationally on campuses, but how we then in our everyday lives can think about safety and wellness when this is happening and we're not sure how much information we're receiving and how accurate it is. So I don't know, Lucia, if you want to say anything more?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what's really interesting is that one of the things that came up when the media reports were coming about the assault was that the RCMP had said that because the suspect had been apprehended, that there was no risk to the community, and that student services, who made the initial call to only inform, I think, a select group of residents about the assault, had decided that they were going to inform the people who they deemed to be most affected by this incident of violence. And it was interesting to me that violence is considered not like that, the impacts of violence in our community, when we have students who might be in residence, friends who might be in residence, but that's not really considered a risk to the community. So we don't really acknowledge how news of violence and the fear of violence really traumatizes our community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I just wanted to maybe bring attention back to the university sexual assault panel that you two were both a part of. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I believe there were six of you on this panel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you put out a report earlier this summer, but the university released their policy before the report was submitted to them. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so both of the panels were formed at the same time, but then just the timing, ours was, the policy was formed before the report. So they did extend the consultation phase. So for everybody who's listening, you have until the end of the month to provide feedback on that policy. It's important, I think. The policy is just one piece of the picture. I think certainly our report and which is actually available on the First Nations and Indigenous Studies website. We've posted it there to make sure it's accessible for people. But we, you know, that's part of larger institutional accountability and just the changing the general culture on campus that we have when it comes to thinking about violence and safety in our everyday kinds of interactions on campus. But that policy is important because if sexual violence does happen, there's certain mechanisms that are in place that are kind of legal channels, or I mean they're not exactly legal in that you can pursue you know through the police if you want to make that kind of complaint. You can. This is a different kind of process, but it is a binding kind of agreement about how the university is going to respond. All universities in BC now have to have a policy in place. Most of them haven't had one, but you know I would encourage everybody to look at what the draft policy is and have conversations. You can provide input on that because it really affects all of us, and the policies I think say a lot about how this issue is treated as well, so how seriously it's treated. Then there's been lots of discussion in the last many years, but especially the last year about ways that people have sought support when they've reported or disclosed violence that's happened, and then the real lack of feeling like it's not taken seriously. So I think we're all invested in trying to see those channels improved drastically. Yeah.
Lucia, do you have anything to add on that note?
Yeah, I think that what's interesting with the provincial legislation coming out around, or that has come out around mandating that colleges and universities develop a policy, is I think that at least in some ways the public conversation has turned towards really focusing the attention on the policy, which, as Sarah mentioned, is only one part, although an integral part, of what's needed to be able to change cultures of violence at universities. And I think it's interesting, and I hope that the discussions of the other elements of our report, which is about institutional accountability and about a larger shift in culture, are discussed, even though I realize now some of the attention is being taken up by the policy simply because they're on a deadline, and that's urgent. But how do we extend that conversation and move past these very, bureaucratic sort of legislative models of dealing with violence towards how we are accountable to each other as community members?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you think that this report or new policy is going to have any effect on culture around campus, more specifically around consent culture? Do you think it will have a positive impact, or do you think that other steps are necessary?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's sort of two aspects. That the policy itself, I think, signals to the larger community that there are measures in place. But then what happens are, perpetrators being given appropriate punishments. So is the policy actually being used properly? So I think what's going to be needed is to see whether or not, a year down the line, 2 or 3 years down the line, is the policy being used in an appropriate measure? Because we know that policy can be a form of deterrent. It can be a form of punishment. But I think that there's a lot farther to go in terms of conversations around consent. And part of that is really, I think, decolonizing our approach to discussions of rape culture and consent and moving it away from this very highly individualized thing of individual victims and individual perpetrators towards a more collective understanding of how violence circulates. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think just picking up on what Lucia said about decolonization, I think part of the, for me, I think about, it's interesting to me that this conversation about sexual violence is happening at the same time as we're thinking about, there's this national discourse around reconciliation in Canada, and specifically on campus as we're building the Indian Residential School Dialogue, History and Dialogue Center. So thinking about universities' roles in changing the way that Indigenous people and settler colonial histories and present-day realities are represented, these are often imagined as very separate, and we don't really think about, the ways that, for one, the foundational lack of consent, as we're here on unceded lands, we just heard Larry Grant talking about that. What that actually means is that this not just this university, but that, we're all here with there's a lack of consent in, foundationally in kinds of the in the way that this place came into being. There are certainly more recent like agreements specifically here between Musqueam and UBC, formal arrangements to recognize the need to gain consent from Musqueam. So there's those kinds of official relationships, which is great. But it's also important to think about within the history of dispossession and especially residential schools, you know, that sexual violence and different kinds of violence were enacted there. Certainly people resisted that. And, you know, there's lots of stories within the TRC of people resisting, running away, you know, all, that whenever there's violence, there's resistance to that at the same time. But then if we think about that as being disconnected from what's happening on campus today, I think we're mistaken. So it helps to make it seem like the kind of acts of violence that happen are just isolated and they're not about a broad culture that, you know, that we have here, which is about, you know, gender relations, which is about a lot of different things. So I think that trying to have conversations that help to make visible some of the kind of invisible ways that power operates on campus is part of what needs to happen to think about what decolonization means in practice. That it's not just about land, it's about our bodies, it's about how we treat each other, it's about consent in our everyday interactions with each other. You know, how can we build our collective kind of capacity to have consensual relationships in the context of, you know, colonization, which is unconsensual. So I think that there's a lot of deep work we need to do to think through how we are together here. That's not just about a top-down kind of approach where policy is going to dictate how we talk to each other, but we can do that. We don't need to wait for the policy to do that kind of work.
Yeah, and when I was speaking to Larry earlier, we were talking about the need for deconstructing institutions and just getting a really deeper level of understanding before we can actually face these types of issues that we want to face. And that's, thank you both for bringing it back to an Indigenous kind of perspective on this issue. It's really important that we talk about it on Unceded Airwaves and that it's not ignored in the media. So I just wanted to really thank both of you for coming on the show today. But before we end our conversation, I also wanted to touch on the event that's coming up, Decolonizing Rape Culture. And you're one of the organizers, aren't you, Sarah?
Yes. Yeah. So it's on Friday. Unfortunately, it's been full for quite a long time. But hopefully some people are able to come. It's intended to be a space to think about, you know, connect issues of violence and resistance to violence and consent culture on campus, thinking about that in the context of colonization, thinking about violence on the land and how that relates to violence, kind of embodied kinds of violence, but also thinking about the ways that organizing against violence, you know, a lot of Indigenous people, especially here, in this area, have been doing really powerful anti-violence work within their families, but also publicly, you know, just broadly to bring these issues to the attention of the public, to national attention, international. And that resistance has been really significant in terms of the way that we understand how, you know, for example, the issue of missing and murdered women in Canada and internationally as well. And so thinking about how do our conversations here connect with that broader anti-violence kind of movement, and how can we respect and hold up that work and that leadership in our local communities. But we're also thinking about different ways that not just universities, but mental health systems, the legal system, all of those systems, how they can sometimes create harm when people seek support for violence, but also how strategically people are trying to change those systems from within. So we have a panel of Indigenous people providing their expertise.
Excellent. Well, it's sure to be a great event if it's already full up. I mean,
unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, but fortunately that you're getting the word out to so many people. I'm speaking with Sarah Hunt, an assistant professor in the First Nations and Indigenous Studies program and the Department of Geography here at UBC, as well as Lucia Lorenzi, who is a UBC PhD graduate in English literature. And both of these women have been working very hard to contribute to the sexual assault policy at the University of British Columbia. Thank you both for being on the show. Lucia?
Thank you so much.
and Sarah. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional ancestral unceded.
You're listening to Babe Waves. We are talking about sexual violence today, so if that is a hard topic for you, please consider tuning into CITR after this program ends, which is 6 o'clock.
So we are back on air, and that was a conversation between CITR's Indigenous Lisa Gerbaf, Sarah Hunt, and Lucia Lorenzi about how we can move forward, about how we can move towards decolonizing violence and a consent culture on campus. The event they were talking about decolonizing rape culture that was mentioned, has passed already. So now we are going to be talking about this for the end of the show. But first, we are going to play a special song.
All right, so the upcoming song contains explicit content and lyrics, but I thought it was really important to play because it addresses toxic masculinity as well as rape culture. So I think it's really directly related to our show today. If you are adverse to explicit language or subject matter, please consider tuning in to CITR after 6 p.m.
Macaroni Tony in a ditch, cause he grabbed my ass and called me a bitch. A Luna should have called a lot sooner. Got wolves around the world, could have sent one of my juniors. But now I'm 47 here, and I bought reinforcement to make sure we clear.
Do you have no direction? Are you trying to make sense of this absurd existence that we experience on a daily basis?
Do you wish to find meaning in this existential quagmire that is the daily grind?
Well, come on down to CITR for Volunteer Wednesdays from 11 to 1 p.m. every week and find your meaning in life. No experience is necessary. So what are you waiting for, Sisyphus? Life is knocking.
If you or someone you know is experiencing challenges with mental health, there are lots of peer and professional resources available at UBC and in the community.
Kaleidoscope is a peer-run mental health support group on campus that meets every Monday, except statutory holidays, from 5 to 6 p.m. in Buchanan Building B, Room 307.
You can visit our website for updated meeting times and additional mental health resources at the-kaleidoscope.com.
If you live in Vancouver and need immediate help, please phone Mental Health Emergency Services at 604-874-7307 or 1-800-SUICIDE for the rest of British Columbia.
You're listening to Babe Waves. Just a content warning, today we're talking about sexual violence, so if that's a hard topic for you, please consider tuning into CITR after this program ends at 6 p.m.
So the song you just heard is Mean What I Mean by Aluna George, featuring rappers Lakey Lee, 47, and Dreezy. And I love that song for multiple reasons. I listen to it all the time. It's from Aluna George's new album that was just released. And, I mean, we can talk about how musically it's complicated, it's catchy, it's a good song, but I think the lyrics are really what makes it. Having several women of color addressing rape culture directly and speaking out against the victim blaming and gaslighting that are sort of foundational to that culture. So I just wanted to share that with you. Thanks.
Completely agree with you there. I think it's a conversation really important to have. So aside from the UBC facilitated sexual assault policy information sessions, there are other conversations around the sexual assault policy happening on campus. Rachel will be discussing one of these alternative conversations. Sorry.
Thanks, Hayo. So one of the alternative conversations that is happening on campus and actually happened today is the dialogue that was titled Rethinking the UBC Sexual Assault Policy Through an Asian Canadian Lens. And this is something that was presented by the Asian Canadian and Asian Migration Studies minor here at UBC. And it's part of a larger project of dialogues called Extending the Conversation on Sexual Violence in Asian Communities on Campus and Beyond, a long name for talking about sexual violence in Asian communities. So the main thing that we focused on in these dialogues today was how we can find a culturally appropriate approach to the sexual assault policy and the barriers that may exist for racialized students and specifically Asian Canadian students who are experiencing sexualized violence. So to begin the conversation, we had Dr. Sarah Jane Finley, who is part of the Sexual Assault Policy Development Panel, which was talked about briefly in the segment of Unceded Airways earlier in our episode, and also Dr. Lucia Lorenzi, who's part of the Sexual Assault University Panel. She was also interviewed in the earlier segment. And essentially what the two women did was they debriefed on their roles in terms of drafting the policy and also how the university panel is informing the policy. And they also had a Q&A where they answered some of the questions that the students there had. But the part that I want to focus on more is the student discussion that came after the question and answer part of the discussion. And so here we broke into smaller groups and we were able to ask particular questions about how people feel about the policy, how it addresses their needs, especially from a cultural perspective, but also how they feel they can impact the policy and how they want to be addressed by the university in terms of asking for their feedback. And this was done through small group discussions, like I mentioned, and it was also documented in an art activity at the end of the event. Unfortunately, I was not able to stay to read all the feedback that was given, but I believe we are going to document those and send those into UBC as part of feedback that is due by the end of this month.
So thank you, Rachel, for your insight. We'll be discussing about this and about the panel, but first we'll listen to the following song.
So the upcoming song contains explicit content and lyrics, but I wanted to play the song because I believe Solange shares a really powerful message about how Black folks are often not allowed to be angry about racialized oppression and talking about racialized oppression. And I believe this can be applied to what we're talking about today. But if you are adverse to explicit language or subject matter, please consider tuning into CITR after this program ends at 6 p.m.
I just said still owe me bucks, so I got the right to get bucked, but I try not to let it build up. I'm too high, I'm too bad or too much, so I let it go, let it go, let it go.
I ran into this girl, she said, why you always blame it? Why you can't just face it? Why you always gotta be so mad? Fucking cap and gown, then I walk up in a bank plan, stack it down, and I laugh at frowns. What they mad about? Cause it come this motherfucker with this mass account that didn't wear a cap and gown. Are you mad cause the judge ain't give me more time? And when I tipped the suicide, I didn't die. I remember how mad I was on that day. Man, you gotta let it go before I get up in the way. Let it go, let it go. I ran into this girl, she said, why you always blame it? Why you can't just face it? Why you always gotta be so mad?
I got a lot to be mad about.
Thank you.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Dave Radio, Fridays at noon on CITR.
Wow, wow, Dave, you're so sway. Oh, Dave, I like your shave.
You're listening to Babe Waves, and today we're talking about sexual violence. So if that's a hard topic for you, please consider tuning in to CITR after this program, which ends at 6 p.m.
Welcome back. So we are discussing about sexual violence today, and we have some people here to discuss about this. So I will let them introduce themselves.
So my name is Shay McConkie.
I'm Elsie.
I'm Rachel.
Lyra here.
Great. So we are all members of the Women's Collective, and I had some questions for you. So what can students do to impact the policy?
I think Lucia is like a great example of someone who has done a lot of work in influencing those policies. So I actually got to speak on a panel with her at a recent conference, which was called The Power of Our Collective Voices, Changing the Conversation on Sexual Violence at Post-Secondary Institutions. And so our panel was actually specifically about grad students and faculty support. Anyway, it went really well. I think something to think about is the ways in which these contributions aren't always rewarded, and a lot of them go on behind the scenes. I can talk a little bit more in a bit about a specific change that I've seen since I started getting into this work, but yeah, I just wanted to point that out.
I was just going to say, I think for like the average student or just, you know, like, yeah, for just like students who I would just say that, students need to educate themselves. That's pretty basic. And it's the best way to, I think, get more involved or like have a proper say in the matter.
And also I wanted to add that although it's obviously not the job, it's not people's job to educate everyone around them, but I think that if you have that agency and if you have that knowledge about the policy and about the university panel, that you should definitely talk to people in your circles about it and tell them about the ways that they can impact the policy, because they are taking feedback from students, and according to Dr. Sarah Jane Finley, they need to respond to each and every one. They need to explain why they may be including that in the policy or why they're not including it in the policy. So your feedback does matter as a student.
Mm-hmm. And it affects everyone. It's an issue that is not everyone is involved in it. Everyone that is a UBC community member should have a say in this topic.
So the policy name is policy number 131. So if you would like to impact the policy, you can submit your feedback to the Office of the University Council at university.council@ubc.ca or through a confidential feedback survey that you can find online as well. And as Rachel said, according to Dr. Sarah Jane Finley, all feedback must be considered and explained So I was wondering, what kind of changes do you want to see take place? Because we've seen the implementation of the blue booth throughout the school, throughout the campus, but I'm wondering what else, what other things can we do?
I think there are a few things to realize, right? Like, we have to be a mix of practical and idealistic. I think it's always important to not just focus on a single issue without putting it in context. So always trying to be intersectional, saying, how does this relate to other forms of oppression? And also recognizing that the purpose of this policy is for UBC to minimize risk to the university. We can't necessarily expect UBC as an institution to actually intentionally address rape culture because it's wrong. We have to know the ways institutions work, and that is they do the least amount of work of change that they have to in order to minimize risk. So how do we work with those logics that institutions work by?
This is something that I observed in the policy, and I just want to be very honest. I don't have a lot of experience about drafting policies and what kind of language needs to be considered there and how explicit and how detailed they need to be. But something that I noticed in the policy when I was reading it in terms of the general principles that were established, there were two lines about how women from marginalized groups, so racialized women and indigenous women, and then they had another line about gender variant women and trans women. They didn't include information about trans women or like mention that. But I just wanted to say that it felt very much like a parenthesis or a side note about how you can somehow encompass all the experiences and the intersections of marginalized people regarding sexual violence and somehow fit it into one sentence in the policy. So I think something I would like to see change is discussions around how to address sexualized violence in marginalized communities without them being an afterthought or a parenthesis in the policy.
Right, and like how can that concern not just inform that sentence, but inform the ways that the whole policy is undertaken? So that's actually really close to the work that I was talking about earlier, which is, so my interest in this topic is as a survivor. I also can't separate my identity as a white settler or trans woman from my identity as a survivor. So the point that comes right after specifying that women are especially vulnerable to sexual assault, and then women with who are intersectionally marginalized are especially affected. And then the next point talks about gender variance, gender diversity, people who basically are trans and non-binary are also really impacted by this. But the thing with that, so this is a very new change, I can tell you that. It's also something that took some pushing in certain situations that are not really public, but also something that I'm pushing even further with, I think, is making a connection. So people like me who are trans women, we sort of fit into both of those categories, and yet with that one point after another, again, there's this separation as if there's no overlap.
For sure. And I was wondering how do you want the university to engage students regarding the policy? Because we, at the beginning of the term, we have this consent initiative taking place, but that's most for first years, freshers, right? So I was wondering at a at other levels. What could we, could the university do to engage all of those other students regarding this very policy?
Mm-hmm. It could be talked about in classrooms, I think. That's just an idea, but no matter what faculty or program or class it is, like, again, it's a cultural issue that we're talking about. And the more that people who are representing the university, who are in power, are addressing it and normalizing the conversation, the more people will, again, be educated on it. And yeah, it's a thought.
So as a person of color, I think that something that needs to be addressed, and this was mentioned in the dialogues today that I was talking about earlier in the episode, is that there needs to be education in languages other than English, especially thinking about culturally appropriate education and approaches. There are international students here, and they make up a significant chunk of the UBC population. And so they're, and also recognizing that in a lot of cultures, including my own, I am a Chinese settler, and recognizing that in these cultures, it's difficult to talk about sex and bodies and sexualized violence and consent and what that means. And I think that thinking about engaging students in the university, working towards education and prevention, there needs to be culturally appropriate approaches. And I think one of the things is to start, first step, is to create education that is in languages other than English.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really, really good point. Mm-hmm. I think, not to generalize, but I feel like there definitely is a theme of like going further than just like making this policy that's mitigating risk. I was gonna say something. Oh, like something I recently thought about is like mandatory sexual violence education, right? Because there are a lot of people who will not educate themselves on this topic. I don't think we can specify a gender of that type of person. Mm-hmm. And yet, I think toxic masculinity does influence that, if not like completely determining it. But the other thing about that is like, if you can't specify who's the person who needs this required education, and you require everyone to do it, then you're also requiring survivors to go over this material that they have an embodied awareness of, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just something I didn't realize. I saw a friend post about that. I was like, oh, that's a really good point.
Also, I think that this is a conversation that we need to start having before university. Mm-hmm. The consent sexual assault is as difficult as it gets, but this idea of just consent, we have to talk about it. I did my high school in France, and at no point I studied that. I studied 4 years in England, and again there was nothing, because people choose different degrees, right? And no matter if you're doing Spanish literature or biology, they are completely different, but I think there should be something unifying that we are teaching our students this this idea of consent. So, Rachel, you were talking about this cultural identity. So how do you feel this policy reflects your needs and cultural identities?
I think I would definitely go back to the point again about how in the policy, at least currently existing, speaking culturally and regarding identities that are sort of experience oppression in intersectional ways, it definitely feels like you are a parenthesis, a side note, an afterthought that is just added in for the sake of, oh yeah, we need to include this part because this is what people are talking about now. And I think Lyra brought up a great point about how it has to move beyond that sentence, and it has to be a mindset or a lens for you to look at the entire policy and the entire educational approach towards consent culture in the university.
Absolutely. And I find in like social justice work, a lot of times people who experience structural violence make these critiques, and then institutions or individuals who get defensive and say, okay, well, what do you actually want us to do about it? What are the practical outcomes of this critique? And I think it's always important to be ready to say, actually, you know what, critique is valid on its own, even without a strategy plan. And also, people who are pressured to make these critiques aren't necessarily the ones who should or even can make the structural changes.
So just another note about the policy. As we mentioned before, if you would like to impact the policy as a member of the UBC community, please submit your feedback to either the Office of the University Council at university.council, that's C-O-U-N-S-E-L, at ubc.ca, or through this confidential feedback survey that can be found at http://equity.ubc.ca/sexual-assault-policy-development/ by October 31st of this year. So by the end of this month, please submit your feedback. And also, just to touch on the point again, according to Dr. Sarah Jane Finley, all the feedback that is submitted via these two forms of submission need to be explained as to why it was included or excluded from the policy. Mm-hmm. Oh, so now we are going to take a break and play a song by a local group, a punk group, which is consists of three women, and it's called Failed Visions, and their group is called Lie. So we wanted to play the song today because we also believe that these artists are addressing rape culture, and there are three strong women who are fighting back against things they don't like in the system. So, yeah, Failed Visions by Lie.
Am I worthy? Am I worthy?
was Failed Visions by the Vancouver group Lié. So that is all the time we have for today on Babe Waves. We want to thank you for listening and thinking about this heavy and difficult topic with us today. As a collective, we encourage you as members of the UBC community and also beyond the UBC community to educate yourself about this policy and also consent culture in general. And for those who are part of the UBC community, again, we want to remind you that if you would like to impact the policy and provide your feedback, please submit it to the Office of the University Council at university.council@ubc.ca or through a confidential feedback survey that can be found at www.equity.ubc.ca/sexual-assault-policy-development/by October 31st of this month. So by the end of this month, please submit your feedback if you would like to impact the policy. You've been listening to Babe Waves. Thank you so much. And we will talk to you next week.